There goes Lance in the open field. 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown! Oh, baby, this kid's pretty good.
You're listening to Bison Report Radio, presented by 24/7 Sports.
The Thunderdome, especially on homecoming, is just not something that you want to allow to get rocking, and they really, really did.
I don't think you could ask for any better. Maybe one more completion to go 11 for 11, but that kid was fun to watch.
Their wing spot is pretty loaded. I mean, you got Jared's going to play. I mean, he's as solid as it gets at the two spot.
Here's your host, publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglum.
What's up, Bison fans, and welcome back to another episode of the Bison Report Radio Podcast. I am your host, the publisher of Bison Report, Ross Uglum, and joining me for this Hoops Preview Edition, might have a little special edition coming up. I am actually traveling to Kansas City to cover these two games this weekend, and staying with my guy, Jacob Morley, Jake Stack, who is a Valley City native who has been doing all of our Senior Bowl work. He's been down in Mobile, and we're probably going to have to throw down a little pod and talk about the performances of Jabril Cox and of course, Dylan Raidens. Both as far as Jake's concerned, as far as everything I've watched, I've had access to the practice tape of everything that, has been said by NFL folks that I know. Everything basically surrounding Raidens and Cox is all positive. I think both players showed they belonged. I mean, Jabril obviously was the best player on LSU's defense this season. Can't really belong any more than that, even though LSU wasn't very good. I mean, he still was an excellent, excellent football player for their team. But Dylan showed that he belonged as well. Not only that he belonged, but that he was better than most of the guys that he lined up across. And that's what you like to see. I think, for both of these kids, top 50 is probably the goal. And so that means you're either a first round pick or you go in the top half of the second round. And I think any team, in the end of the second round, that'll be your better teams, your teams that made at least the playoffs here. Your Green Bay's, your Kansas City's, your New Orleans is, they're going to get some really good football players if they do make it into the late 50s and the 60s. I think that both guys made themselves plenty of money, though, this weekend. I think Raidens and Cox had certain things that they, wanted to prove or should prove, and I think they both did, and that is nothing but positive, but we'll get to that in a little bit. Or possibly, like I said, drop a little weekend pod because our guy on the ground in Mobile that was talking to NFL folks and talking to other scouts and analysts all week, that's where I'm staying in Kansas City. Going to stay with my good buddy Jake and obviously cover this North Dakota State series with UMKC. Nate, I want to talk to you before we dive into this UMKC thing too, just about kind of the program on two fronts, because I don't know if you read it, but I dropped a piece this week just about Richmond's goals and kind of what he put forth when Gene Taylor hired him and his program wanted to look like. Did you have a chance to read into that?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of skimmed it because I've been on the road all week. But, yeah, I mean, he's building a program that is going to withstand kind of some downfalls, but you're going to use your coaching and development kind of tactics that you've used to build from high school kids. And I know we've talked about it plenty in the past, and that doesn't mean he's not going to take a transfer to kind of help out the program if it's the right fit and is going to help the culture and not take anything away from that. But he's really has built a culture that's now going to help them be a consistent winner for years to come.
Yeah, I just, if you guys haven't checked it out over on Bison Report, please do. Went a lot into it, took some really cool anecdotes, had a chance to really talk to some people close to the situation, close to the program, spoke to Dexter Werner, spoke to Gene Taylor, who obviously hired David, and then spoke to Jeff Culhane, who you know, other than myself and Nate, is probably about the only other person to see every single North Dakota State men's basketball game over the last 3 years. It's just really insightful. We talk about the meeting that was held after North Dakota State was drubbed down in Brookings, and they're 34-8 if you include the Summit League tournaments and the Dakota Showcase against Summit League opponents since that time. Since there was kind of a come to Jesus meeting in Sioux Falls after a loss in Brookings, the Bison are 34-8 against Summit League opponents. Really, really impressive stuff. And I think some of that comes into the buy-in, and that's one little news item that I wanted to kind of make note of, Nate, and sort of just talk about the quality of the kid, the quality of the human being, and kind of the buy-in here. They announced Josh Streit. And so what that means, folks, I just kind of reading between the tea leaves, is they did what they did with Rocky Cruiser, and that's Josh Streit is walking on, or they could not have announced him until the late signing period, which is later on in February. The fact that the school announced that he was coming in means that he's going to be a 4 for 5. And that kid had so many opportunities to, take a different offer, or, go to a number of other Division I institutions, had the opportunity to walk on at Iowa State and play football, had the opportunity to play Division I football on scholarship at South Dakota State. So I just want to kind of commend that kid and talk about the buy-in from him and his family to do the walk-on thing. And I just think he's a great fit, Nate.
Yeah, I mean, it just shows kind of the culture that they've set. I'm sure if that kid was able to get to campus and even talk and meet with some of the guys. I mean, early on when Dave was coaching, you had a couple kids that were going to transfer out. I mean, even recently you get a couple kids that are going to transfer out. But it doesn't happen very often. Not like you see it from other schools where the culture just isn't set in and they don't like how much they're playing or not winning enough. It kind of shows just the kind of chemistry and type of players that he's bringing in. And Josh is obviously a great kid, and he ultimately wants to make sure he's going to a winner. He wants to know that the coach is going to be staying. He wants to know the type of players. I mean, we're sending kids to play professionally overseas almost every season. And if that's your long-term goal, I mean, picking a school that you're going to play at and have a chance to be successful. And then ultimately, if your long-term goal is to go make money playing basketball, NDSU is a great mid-major spot to do that. And I think that the results have shown in these past few years.
Yeah, and I think he's a really important recruit too. I sort of laid out in that piece on Bison Report what the next couple of years look like. A lot of that's going to be dependent, folks, on, you know, who does do the waiver of season of competition. As most of you know, they're not going to count this year if you don't want to, because of COVID, because of uncertainty, because of canceled games, because of, frankly, canceled seasons. There are teams that are just absolutely shutting it down. It's going to be interesting to see, I guess, who does decide to come back. But you look at the next 3 years, and there's a table there that shows everything. There are a ton of guys that we know about that are going to be in the rotation in 20. Like, here's my 2023-2024 rotation. Andrew Morgan will probably start at the 5. Grant Nelson at the 4. Malik Harden-Hayes would be a senior at the 3. Jarius Cook would be a senior at the 2. Des McKinney at the 1. Skunberg, Streit, and Biggs Wilson are all guys that we know of. And we're talking about 2023 and 2024, like just way down the line. Now, it means nobody transfers. It means Malik and Jarius and Biggs all decide to take their season of competition waiver. It means a lot of things. But the reason I think Streit's so important is just his game. And you and I haven't really been able to talk about this a ton, but this is a guy who just does whatever the team needs. I mean, he was the five for his high school team because he's 6'7", and you know, most of the Minnesota high school bigs are going to be 6'4", 6'5". He was a wing for his AAU team and did a ton of scoring. Then he went to a better AAU team, D1 Minnesota, with a bunch of high major teammates, and basically developed, you know, into this role player and sets screens, is a decent ball handler, hustles, defends, does a ton of things. And in my opinion, his entire career is going to be with guys that have the ball in their hand a ton. I mean, you're going to, you know, you're going to have the ball in Des McKinney's hands a lot. Jarius Cook likes to shoot it. Malik Harden-Hayes, Bowden Skunberg, by the time he's a junior, folks, I promise, will shoot it. Andrew Morgan's going to, you know, get his touches. Des McKinney dribbles the ball a ton, loves to get north and south. Josh Streit's career, and I'm not saying he can't be the best player on the team. I'm not saying he can't be all summit. I'm not saying any of that. I mean, we have no idea. He could be Taylor Braun for all we know. But the style of basketball that he's already been willing to play seems like it's really going to fit in with the first 3 years that he'll be on campus, where there are a lot of guys that get touches, because it's not like last year where Vinny and Tyson take most of the shots. Everyone takes most of the shots. There's a Malik night, then there's a Rocky night, then there's another Rocky night, but then there's a Tyree night, and then there's a Sam night, and then Grant Nelson gets 14 and 6 off the bench. I mean, I just think he's a phenomenal fit.
Yeah, and those type of players that come in and need some skill development, and maybe he does, maybe he doesn't, but like you said, he knows that there's going to be a role on his team, and it seems that he's going to do whatever the coaches want him to do and do it to the best of his ability. And I think we have a good coaching staff that isn't going to put him in a situation where he can't excel. And with the way that they have shown that they can develop skill with past players, they're going to get him working on some things that they see him excelling at, whether it's knocking down an open three, whether it's putting him in position to drive to the basket or cut off a post feed or just be a big time rebounder or lock down the other team's best offensive player. But just seeing his game and some of his highlights, you can't teach athleticism. You can't teach playing hard. That's just something that comes with the kid. And he seems to be that type of kid, which is going to definitely make him a good fit with NDSU.
Yeah. And that's, like I said, I think he's just the right fit. I think he could be the second or third best player when he's a junior or senior if he needs to be. But if he's never more than the fourth or fifth option on offense, he's going to be athletic and good on defense and long. And he's already shown that he's a team kid. I mean, obviously being a 4-for-5, you know, being a team kid for D1 Minnesota, you can see that Frieden Valley Watkins, he was able to be the star, but you know, with a bunch of great players around him, he just does whatever it takes to win. And that's, I think, the culture that, as you mentioned, Richmond has really put forth for this squad. All right, Nate, let's take a look ahead to this UMKC game. Big time news yesterday on the Insiders. My guy, our guy, Andy Rickoff, basically the head coach of UMKC came out and just said, folks, there is a 95% chance that McKissick isn't going to play. And that's their top guy, Brandon McKissick. He's their leading scorer. And Billy Donlan says, hey, here's the deal. He's got a shoulder. He got hurt against Oral, and there's about a 95% chance he doesn't play this weekend. Now, it certainly could be some gamesmanship. He could be right there in warmups when I get to UMKC tonight. But 95% tells me that the kid's not playing, and the fact that he would just say it out loud means it's kind of obvious or it's definitely not going to happen. That's pure conjecture, but it is a UMKC team without their top guy. But as you mentioned in the pre-production meeting, Nate, this is kind of a mirror image of North Dakota State's program.
Yeah, I mean, besides the two non-Division I games, which kind of inflated their stats a little bit, I mean, they're playing in the 60s. They're going to try to grind it out, and they're playing a lot of different guys. They got some depth. Got a couple good freshmen, but like you said, losing your best player, scoring almost 17 a game, it's going to make it, I believe, more of a grinded out game, which is kind of how NDSU plays. They're really good defensively, giving up 62 points a game. Like I said, they're offensively, they have it at 74 a game still, but that they scored in the hundreds in their two non-division one games. But other than that, most of their games have been in the 60s, low 70s, and they've played with some good teams. I mean, Toledo is leading the MAC. They lost to them by 7. Kansas State's obviously struggling in the Big 12, lost to them by 4. St. Louis is ranked, lost to them by 16. And, you know, they suffered a couple close losses here in the Summit League, lost by 2-6 to South Dakota, who's obviously leading the league right now, and went to Oral Roberts and won a game, who's picked to be one of the top teams in the Summit this year. So definitely a team you can't look at their 6-9 record and their 2-4 in the Summit League. It's definitely going to be a grinded out game where NDSU can't afford to not play well if they want to win any of these games.
Yeah, and I think that is the overarching, like, sentiment, right? I've spoken to Jeff Culhane about this team, spoken to Brian, Sean, and spoken, of course, to Dave, and that's been, you know, the number one thing is that do not talk about this this Kansas City team and just talk about their record, which frankly, I mean, you look at it and it's kind of gross. I mean, that's, you would not be frightened of this UMKC team that's 6-9 with 2 non-D1 wins. So, you know, basically 4-9, 2-4 in the conference. You would just look at this squad and kind of think they were trash, and they're not trash is what everyone, you know, that knows basketball and that knows this league that I've spoken to has talked about. As you mentioned, you know, went down and split at the Mabee Center down in Oral Roberts. It's tough to get dubs in Oral Roberts. Lost the one game by 2. I have a theory that maybe Oral Roberts isn't as good as we think they are. But it's and was really close, you know, twice to beating USD. So, yeah, I do think this is a tough squad. And at the same time, I think the McKissick loss is a big deal. The Bison have kind of gotten a little bit lucky in that regard. I know they would probably tell you that they definitely would prefer to play every team with their, you know, top guys rocking and rolling. But they've had a chance to see South Dakota State without Douglas Wilson. They've had a chance to see Denver without Jace Townsend. And now they will see UMKC without Brandon McKissick and his 16.8 points per game. So they're going to have to find kind of a different way of getting the ball in the basket.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see how deep they go. And especially from NDSU's perspective, how deep will they go into their bench? I mean, we've seen the last couple series that last weekend, obviously they were kind of forced to get a little deeper into their bench with some injuries as well. And the weekend before, they went about 7.5 deep. So it'll be interesting to see what Dave does from that perspective this weekend. Obviously some guys possibly coming back from injury, and how deep is he going to go? I mean, you got to, again, we've talked about it all Summit season, back-to-back games, that it's not easy on the legs. You can say it's college kids, but those games are a grind if you're playing 35, 40 minutes. And when you get to Saturday night with 10 minutes left in the game, is that going to play a factor? Well, it definitely is. So if you can find a way to get deeper into the bench and get your starters in the high 20s, mid 20s in minutes, that's definitely going to be a big factor. Obviously, you want to make sure you can get this win tonight. And then I think a road split would be ideal. Obviously you want to try to get a sweep, but just take it a game at a time and use your depth is what I would recommend. Obviously I'm not the head coach, so we'll see how Dave handles it. And it's going to be a grinder. I see the game in the 60s, and UMKC obviously losing 17 points a game isn't fun, isn't going to be easy. So I think that they're going to rely on their defense and try to give themselves a chance to win in the end. They're going to know that NDSU is a good program. Obviously, Billy Donlin's had some success when he's been a head coach and even an assistant coach. at Northwestern in Michigan. Was assistant when Northwestern made their first NCAA tournament, won the Big Ten at Michigan, and he was the coach of the year in the Horizon League at Wright State. So he's shown that he can coach, he can recruit, and I think UMKC is going to kind of be a little bit of a dangerous team going forward. I mean, Kansas City develops some good high school talent, some good players that have typically gone to Oral Roberts. You got the Dominic Morrisons of the world that end up going to Tulsa, but he's done a great job, and I fully expect both these games to be some grinded out games. Now that I say that, I'm sure the game will be in the 70s or 80s. yeah, I mean, you look at the team's box scores, and NDSU's been in some grinders, and UMKC, besides their non-D1s, like I said, has been in some grinders in the 60s, low 70s.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's an interesting point. You know, obviously Des McKinney would be a kid like from Raytown that you probably maybe down the road would look at a school like UMKC where they haven't in the past. Be a fun little homecoming for Des this weekend. And he's going to be key. And I think he's going to be key, and Jackson is going to be huge. And those two, I think, are going to be the key to, because surprise, surprise, coach didn't, you know, really let us in on what was going on with Malik and Bowden. Basically, you'll see it. There's a BRTV coming out later, and it'll say, you know, that whatever, neither was catastrophic. I don't think we thought either was catastrophic, and that they're just kind of working stuff out. But if, you know, both guys are unavailable again, I think Malik probably has a better chance of being available than Bowden, but that's a lot of conjecture. I still think with his performance against Denver, Jackson earned time. And I think that is really important because of Jackson's versatility. I think that, you know, really Jackson can play 2 to 5. You saw him play some backup center against UND at the Dakota Showcase. He's 6'6". He's gotten so much thicker physically and stronger that I think he can, and he has played plenty of backup 4 minutes when he's been in there, but he's a good enough shooter. And I think, you know, can use his size, you know, to play the two and to play the three and to spell, you know, Malik or certainly spell Jarius if that had to be it. But I think, 18-minute run for Jax really can save some legs, and that's going to be super important. Of course, you know, getting Des McKinney an 18- to 19-minute run to save Sam's legs and to, you know, kind of keep the rotation moving, and then whatever you want to do at the five. You want to give Biggs an 8-minute run and play Rocky 32, that's fine. I mean, that Rock's in phenomenal shape, and maybe if they, you know, could pull away from UMKC one of these times, he gets another one of those 22-minute deals. But, yeah, you know, I think that there's a good chance that they take two. I'm not convinced one way or the other at this time. I think you're right. There would be a split would be something they probably feel pretty good about. But using the transitive property of basketball, which is a dumb thing to do, but just kind of using it, you know, they lost two home games to USD, and I was down there with Sam at the Dakota Showcase. I was not super impressed with USD. I get that they're undefeated in the league, you know, but the way NDSU has been able to defend Amude and not let him go absolutely nuts, Plitzewhite's a good player for sure, but they lost two home games to USD, and North Dakota State beat USD pretty comfortably in a true neutral game. I just, if USD can go down there and take two, North Dakota State can. Will they? Maybe not. Certainly possible that they won't, but they can, and that would set them up just phenomenally. Really, they would be in such a good spot, Nate, because that would get them to 9-1 in the league, and basically would lock in the number two seed. Because I would guess, you know, you could pretty much lock in a 3-3 finish. I think that the Oral Roberts at home, South Dakota State at home, USD on the road. If you're 9-1 going into that and you split all that, which would not be what they would want to do, but and you split all that, you're 12-4. I don't know the last 12-4 Summit League team that wasn't at least the two seed.
Yeah, I think you're spot on with that. And USD is going to lose some games. I mean, they, like you said, it's not that they're not impressive. They have a player who can take over a game at any time. I think they've gone through the kind of easier part of their Summit League schedule, which I think we can say NDSU has as well. But it, like you said, NDSU handled them, and I don't, credit to them. They've won the games that they're supposed to win so far. And they're definitely a team that has won in the past few years, and they have a decent roster, but I don't see them as a top Summit League team. So we'll see what happens going forward. And kind of going back to NDSU's bench, I mean, in a grinded out game where you might need a couple buckets, Jackson needs to be on the floor to possibly hit a couple shots. I mean, he's a really big time offensive threat, and I hopefully he can find a way to get 15, 20 minutes. And who knows what Dave does with Donald Carter this week. I mean, we kind of forget about him when he made his debut last week. Maybe we can get him in there to spell some point guard or even some off guard spot to give 10, 15 minutes and see what he can do. But yeah, this weekend, ideally we want to get a sweep, because 9-1 in the league would be great, coming up with probably the three other best teams to finish it out with four of them at home. But let's grind out this one Friday, and then we'll get into talking about a sweep on Saturday.
So yeah, give me your prediction. How do you think everything goes down this weekend, and then we'll wrap up shop?
I think Dave's been preaching about not looking at the record, and you can, I mean, all it takes for any big basketball fan is to look at the season box scores. I mean, UMKC's really good defensively, that they're really well coached, and I think NDSU's going to be ready to go tonight. And if they can hit some shots early and get a little bit of a lead and kind of rely on their defense, and UMKC's going to have to find ways to score, because obviously we talked about their best player being out. So I think if NDSU can get up in that 6-8-10 point range and make it a half court game and make UMKC score in the half court, I think that they're going to struggle. I think NDSU will take the first one here tonight. Kind of low scoring in the 60s. I know I say low scoring, but I do think these games are going to be in the 60s. So NDSU will need to find ways to score, hit shots, and I think they're going to be ready to roll tonight.
Yeah, I think that we're probably in line for a split. UMKC, they're on life support a bit here. I think if they want to avoid a really, really tough matchup in the Summit League tournament, they cannot get swept at home, even by a team that's as good as North Dakota State. They absolutely need to find a way to take one of these two games. All right, Nate, we really appreciate your time. As mentioned, folks, I'm going to be in Kansas City at the game. We'll be covering the game live and maybe a Senior Bowl pod with Jacob Moore. Have a great weekend, and go Bison.